he's been seen on CNBC, the Fox News Channel, and the Fox Business Channel. His articles can be found on MarketWatch, Seeking Alpha, TheStreet.com, and many other places. He's the author of the weekly Best Stocks Now newsletter and the inventor of the Best Stocks Now app. He's president of Gunderson Capital Management. Here is professional money manager, Bill Gunderson.
And welcome to the Tuesday morning that is the March 24th edition of the Best Stocks Now show. As the drama continues coming out of the Middle East yesterday, you know, we were up 1,100. We were down before the market 300 points in the futures. And we were up, I think, 1,100 at one point, and we ended up like 600 or 700 points by the end of the day. And then the futures were way down this morning, and we've opened to the downside. I think there's still a lot of details. The devil's in the details with this supposed peace talks in Iran. We've got the Dow down 253 yesterday after about a 700-point gain yesterday. We're at 45,000. 954. The oil stocks are doing well today. Boy, Houston. The Houston stocks. We should do a Houston index. Those LNG stocks are really doing well. The NASDAQ is down 154. AI stocks down today, and the chip stocks, they tend to be risk on. So the NASDAQ's down 70 basis points. It had a good day yesterday. The S&P 500 is down 35 points right now. Now, here's the bigger issues here. The elephant in the room is oil right now. Oil right now is up 4.9%. And interest rates is the other elephant in the room. And we're at 4.40 right now on the 10-year. So welcome to today's Best Stocks Now show, with professional money manager Bill Gunderson, president of Gunderson Capital Management. I'm here with Barry Kite, our chartered financial analyst. Barry, you know, usually every spring break, Easter vacation, we go to Dollywood. I'm not at Dollywood, but I feel like I'm at Dollywood. You know that giant roller coaster?
Going up and down. That's
that
oil
they've
prices.
Got at Dollywood there.
Is called, was it the something Cannonball? The Wabash Cannonball?
No, that's a song.
Yeah.
I like that. I
they named
that's a
one
good
after
song.
It.
They played that at the Grand Ole Opry all the time, the Wabash Cannonball. But Thunderstruck, I believe, is the big, the worst roller coaster at Dollywood. Anyways, I feel like that's where I'm at these days. The market yesterday finished well to the upside, but it was a roller coaster of a couple hours, and somebody placed the $580,000 bet that oil prices were going to drop. Like 1 hour before Trump went on True Social.
I saw that too. Yeah, right.
Was it Don Jr.? Was it Kirshner?
Probably a Kushner? Staffer, a staffer on Polymarket or something.
Or like, was it Nancy Pelosi?
Yeah,
we don't know who it was, but gee, they're good at guessing. Of course, I pretty much said it on Saturday. I should have placed a bet. I said oil prices are going to go down. He's going to make a deal. He'll cut a deal, and the oil prices will collapse. Well, they're back up today. Interest rates are back up today. And that connection between oil prices and interest rates, you say, well, what's the connection there? Inflation is the connection, because when the market fears inflation or when inflation is in the mix, bond investors demand a bigger return. No, I'm not buying your bonds at 3.99%. I want 4.4%, and that's where the market is right now on the U.S. 10-year. And the 2-year has also gone way up because we think you're creating inflation. Now, the question is this inflation that's going to stick and be with us? Are elevated oil prices going to be with us for a long time? I wouldn't make that bet myself, but that's what the bond market is saying, and that's what a lot of bond or market participants are saying. We think that inflation is going to rear its ugly head and that oil and gasoline prices are going to remain elevated for a long time. And, of course, that trickles down to food prices. It trickles down to meat prices. It trickles down to airline, everything. almost everything impacted by higher oil prices and higher interest rates. But there's another side of the coin that says, you know, he's got, they're working overtime. They're probably working 24/7. They're negotiating with the former leader of the parliament in Iran. And, you know, I mean, Iran is divided. You've got people, old leaders there or new leaders or wannabe leaders saying there are no discussions going on. And you've got others. Witkoff, I think, is a pretty honest guy. He says, no, discussions are going on with Iran right now. And Israel is, in the meantime, saying that, I don't see any deal coming soon. Thanks a lot, Israel.
When I saw where Saudi Arabia would prefer for it to keep going, so it's
I don't know though. I mean, they're getting a lot of disruption into their oil fields. They fear Iran. Iran has been pretty nasty to Saudi Arabia. They've blown up their refinery, portions of their refinery a few times. But you know, I think what's hurting the markets today is an Israeli official. Does he officially know anything? We don't know. I mean, is he privy to the talks that are taking place? I don't know. But he says there's a report. This is coming from CNN. So take it for what it's worth. They say that there's no Iran deal in sight as the strikes continue. All right. So that, I think, is probably putting a lot of pessimism into what we're hearing from the White House and the administration. But they're in there. Bahrain is pitching a UN resolution to secure the Hormuz shipping. And the Gulf states are pretty much all involved. Saudi Arabia has agreed to let U.S. forces use its King Fahd air base. You've got Arab against Arab right now taking place. The United Arab Emirates, which started cracking down on Iranian-owned assets in the country, is also considering sending its military to join the fight. How about that? The Gulf states are unified in their anger towards Iran, Arab officials told the Wall Street Journal. But they are also angry as they have not been able to influence U.S. decisions despite being security partners. They feel like they should have been more involved in the talks and everything before this all took place. But at the end of the day, they're no friends of Iran. Iran also told Arab officials that it wants to charge tolls for ships seeking to travel through the... In other words, their demand... This is like the guy on the corner in New York City. You want to put a hot dog stand on this corner? You're going to have to pay Louis, right? A big chunk of money.
Reminds me of parking at a baseball game or sporting event sometimes.
Yeah.
Like, hey, it's normally free to park here, but we're charging $15.
Yeah.
We'll keep an eye on it for you.
So they're saying, we'll let you through. Just send, $50 million in Bitcoin or whatever to this account. I'll tell you, that's something. It's something to behold watching all of this. And, I was just looking at our holdings here this morning, and I noticed it's a tale of two markets right now. On the one hand, we have some big winners today. Venture Global, VG, we're almost even now for the day, by the way. We're down just 0.07% overall. Venture Global's up 10.4%. I picked that up in the relative value fund. It is probably the second best liquid natural gas stock, maybe third or fourth. There's four of them really that are major players in LNG. But Venture's up 10.4%, breaking out to the upside today. That's helping us a lot. Cheniere, which has got the symbol.
That. You just picked that up on March 20th, by the way, which what, I guess you got pick VG up on Friday. So
nice pick, Gunderson. Hey, I had one of the junior analysts watching this morning as I prepared the radio show. I said, we're going to have four or five people trained to help Barry out just in case. I go to Dollywood, which I haven't been in quite some. He watched me prepare the show, and he said, man, you're up against the clock all day long. I said, from the time I get up in the morning, I'm up against the clock. Because the market opens at 9:30 a.m. no matter what. And the show begins at 10 a.m. no matter what. And, of course, we've got to get all of this ready in time before all of that happens. So he sees how stressful this business can be. And Barry sees it too. And then, you know, I've got 1,600 accounts to manage here after the show. But of course, we're in those four or five different portfolios, which makes it very manageable. Hey, Applied Materials just went positive. It's up 2.3%. Devon Energy up 3.5%. Halliburton up 2%. So, you know, and even SanDisk has now gone positive. So there must be good news coming out while we talk. While we talk, we'll be right back. Welcome back here to the second quarter of today's Best Stocks Now show. The market's moving. Let me tell you, I talked about that Dollywood roller coaster. That's what we're on today. Make sure you buckle in today. The market is paring some of its losses here from this morning, and but. I mean, this obviously is a very fluid situation. I think that's probably the best way to describe what's taking place. And the market is taking its cue from what's coming out of the White House, what's coming out of Israel, what's coming out of the Gulf states. And from there, it's adjusting oil prices where the market thinks those oil prices belong. And the bond market is watching with a very wary eye, sniffing that inflation, the winds of inflation blowing, and demanding a higher interest rate before they'll belly up to the bar and buy those bonds. So a lot going on right now, a lot of wheels in motion, a lot of moving parts. I take it a day at a time, and I take it one stock at a time. And like I say, there's a lot of stocks that are doing quite well so far today. Baker Hughes,
you call the sunny side of the street.
There's definitely a sunny side of the street, and there's definitely a windy, kind of blustery side of the street today. But really, it's kind of evened out right now. There's not too much that's getting hurt too badly. Baker Hughes has got a they're behind an initial public offering, HMH Holdings, and it's going to target a valuation of $948 million in an IPO, so it's going to be about $1 billion company. This could be interesting to watch, and we were just there. You know, these companies like Baker Hughes and Halliburton. You may not realize it. I'm going to talk about Halliburton for a minute.
Dude, the servicers, they're going to rebuild. They're going to be some of the ones that rebuild the, a lot of the infrastructure that's getting destroyed at the moment.
Yes, and we met with someone while we were there. He was in the data center division, right? He works
right.
for the data center.
That was Schlumberger. Yeah, Schlumberger.
Oh, okay,
yeah,
SLB. Yeah, but Halliburton's also into it.
Yeah, they are. Yep.
Because I was reading, I was watching a train video, and this guy was flying over this railroad yard on the East Coast, and he says, I don't know why, but these buildings here say Halliburton on them. And it was like in Pennsylvania. He goes, I don't know what Halliburton's doing here. And I read in the comments, because it was on YouTube, and the comments were, well, Halliburton has a big facility back there, and they're doing data center work, and they also provide proppant, which is like the sand, for doing shale drilling in the shale. So Halliburton is a pretty diversified company, And I got to believe Baker Hughes. If SLB, if Schlumberger is involved in data center, I'm sure that Halliburton and the other one there would also have exposure there. Okay, here's a big buy. This is an interesting story. This stock, SK Hynix, which we've talked about many times. You go, what's SK Hynix? Well, SK stands for South Korea, and Hynix is the name of the company, and the symbol is HXSCL. Let me write that down, HXSCL. But if you look at it, I don't think it's really tradable. But look that up, Barry, on Yahoo, HXSCL. So we bought it through owning the EWY ETF, which is a South Korea ETF. And 25% of that ETF is SK Hynix, and the other 25% is Samsung. And they're caught up in this memory squeeze, big-time memory squeeze, which is boosting Halliburton, SanDisk, Samsung, and SK Hynix. SK Hynix just announced a deal to buy $8 billion of equipment from guess who, Barry? Who sells the equipment, the only equipment in the world?
My guess would be ASML.
You got it. There so it's all kind of connected, right? Taiwan Semiconductor, SK Hynix, Samsung, Micron, NVIDIA, SanDisk, ASM lithography and AMD to some extent.
Yeah,
that's the nucleus of the semiconductor sector right there.
Yeah, and it doesn't look like there's really any volume. That's why we ended up having to hunt
there's
down
no
that
volume. You could not buy that stock. But guess what? They're coming to an American listing. SK Hynix, according to a separate report, they're seeking to raise 10 trillion, that's in South Korean money, wons, which is really 10 billion.
That's a lot of zeros.
Yeah, 10 trillion is 10 billion. Okay. They must have a little inflation there in South Korea or whatever. For a potential listing in the U.S., man, would that be one hot IPO. You know, when SanDisk went public, SanDisk was a public company for many years. I've followed SanDisk for years. And then it was, I think, bought out by Western Digital. And then Western Digital spun it off. And today it trades on its own, SNDK. But SNDK went public for the second time. Let me see what price that was at. It was at a really low price. And, of course, yeah, $27 a share, and now it's $700. It went public last year, Barry, at $27 a share, and now it's $700.
Wow, yeah.
That's that memory shortage. So I would think that a U.S. listing on South Korea stock SK Hynix would be a pretty hot little IPO.
Yeah,
we'll keep our eye on that.
I think
one.
It would. Yeah, I don't think they'd have too much trouble raising cash there. And it's interesting. I mean, look at a 5-year chart of Micron. A lot of these names are like this. I mean, there was basically traded almost at $100 for literally 4 years before this memory pop up. And now what? It's trading at just under 400. So it was at 100 for 4 years, and then the last year has been really nice.
And the other junior analyst who does some work for me, he said, Bill, the app is wrong. I said, what? What stock? He said, Micron's not right. He said, it's showing $93 a share in earnings next year, and they're only making $8 this year. He says, there's a big error. I said, sit down for a minute. I showed him Market Smith.
Yeah.
No, I showed him Market Smith. I said, here's the earnings estimates. In 2024, Micron made $1.30 per share. This year, they're going to make $8.29. Next year, they're going to make $56. And in 27, they're going to make $93 per share. The app is right. We'll be right back.
I said the right thing, but it must use the wrong line. I've been on the right trail, but it must use the wrong call. In a bad place, and I wonder what. was good for.
This is Bill Gunderson. Thank you for tuning in to today's Best Stocks Now, Best Inverse Funds Now show. I put several hours of research in during the wee hours of the morning each day to bring you the very best cutting-edge stories that I can. To get 2 free weeks of my newsletter, go to GundersonCapital.com. To talk to us about our fee-based only money management services, call us at 855-611-BEST. Now, back to the second half of the show.
And welcome back here to the second half of today's Best Stocks Now show. Barry, I want to go back to that Micron story just for a minute and do a little bit of math. If Micron is going to make $92.67, by the way, that's the consensus analyst estimates per share. How many shares do they have? Okay, I'd have to get out a you'd have to do this on a spreadsheet to calculate this, but let's see, the amount of shares they have.
You need a scientific calculator to do your to
they've got
10 trillion earlier in
I'm looking at 1 billion shares, 1.1 billion. What's 92? They're going to make $100 billion in profit in 2027? Now, let's do a little bit more math on that. If the stock is currently trading at $394 per share, and they're going to make $92, doesn't that work out about four times earnings, forward P.E. ratio? But obviously the trick is, and I don't know what they teach you in Chartered Financial Analyst School, what do they teach you when you've got like an anomaly like this, where you're going to have this peak earnings? How do you put a value on the, what kind of a multiple do you put on $92.67 divided into 394? That yields a forward PE of 4. You could say, well, if it just trades at 10 times earnings, this stock will double from here. But this isn't a growth rate, right? This is a bulge. This is like, okay, earnings have been dinking along, and all of a sudden, wow, they go to the moon, and pretty soon they'll come back to dinking along. So,
yeah, and the trick is how long will they last? What's the duration? And then obviously, what's your confidence interval, right, in those future earnings? And you know, so in other words, how visible are they? And so you know, if you look at some of their order backlog, right? I mean, they've got a good bit of those earnings, right, are likely, you know, are pretty highly likely to occur because they're going to, they've got those orders. The trick is they've got to build capacity.
They know what their margins are. They know what their margins are. So if they can fulfill all these sales that they have, well, NVIDIA has a $1 trillion backlog. I don't know what Micron's backlog is, but the analysts are saying based on their backlog, these are booked sales. They're going to make $92.67 per share times 1 billion shares. They're going to have earnings of $93 billion. The market cap of the company is only $444 billion. Just from a logical point of view, does it not seem that four times forward earnings seems a little bit on the cheap side?
Yeah, I mean, just looking here on, you know, via Seeking Alpha and some of these other, you know, very conservative estimates, I mean, you're looking at a forward P.E. ratio of 6.98, right? So just under
Yeah, that's
7.
On next year. Okay, but
yeah,
now we're going out to 2027.
Right, yeah. I mean, it's low. You know, talk about something that's visible, right? Of course, next year's earnings, much more visible than further down the road. And we're already talking, I mean, you're looking at a 7 multiple for next year's earnings, which is, you know, ridiculous. I mean, find another 7 multiple out there that you would actually want to put your money in, and you probably won't find one. It's
no.
probably a 7 multiple for a reason, you know.
I just don't think that this memory shortage thing, I don't think this story is over. I mean, this quarter that they just reported, and the stock has come down ever since they reported the quarter, right? Their sales were up, their sales tripled, and their earnings were up sevenfold.
Yeah, but the stock hit, you know, touched 470, 471,
yes,
in that span. So, I mean, you're talking about, you know, we're at 392 right now. I mean, you're talking a pretty significant pullback from the high. So.
Yes. So the question is, too, is what is the consensus target price out there? You'd probably find a pretty wide range. I got to believe, though, it's somewhere in the $500 range, and the stock's trading at 392 right now. And here's another twist in this whole thing, another piece of the puzzle. Who was it? Someone reported today that Taiwan Semiconductor, I think it was SK Hynix, is running at almost 100% capacity right now. In other words, there's no more capacity. They can't build another plant. It's like steel. I remember there's been lots of times when something's running at 100% capacity and they can't build them. Well, let's go back to the ventilators during the COVID. Remember, they couldn't produce and they were running at 100% capacity. They had every factory that makes a ventilator making ventilators. So you get a situation like that, but then
in 5G world, remember when 5G came out, right? All those chip companies were you know, Taiwan Semi was doing very well. You had Qualcomm was doing very well because they were, you know, those things were at, you know, capacity at that particular moment. Obviously, that, you know, supply demand mismatch has waned. We haven't heard, you know, you don't have to hear the 5G story anymore, right? It's moved on to what we're talking about now.
So why do you think that the Micron's come down $50-$60 a share since that blowout earnings report? Give me your take.
I mean, you know, essentially, I feel like it was folks, you know, taking profits, right? I mean, we yourself included, you took
yes,
a pretty significant
profit. Yes, but I got back into it, too.
Right, yeah. But, you know, to me, it was just one of these things where it was, you know, kind of that sell the news, right, story. And,
yeah.
You know, they'll begin to build back towards that. I mean, there's no way that the stock can... You know, at some point, I mean, at a seven forward P/E ratio, it's pretty.
And four, if you're used 2027, 92,
right?
It's trading at four. So anyway, we're going to continue to watch this story. We own Micron. We took a 65% profit. I said, you know what? I made this in 2 months, 2.5 months, whatever. That's a gift. Take it. And you know, I'm glad I did. It went a little higher after we sold it, but I'm not going to complain about 65%. And then I got back in it because the strain, the supply strain is just like nothing I've ever seen since I've been in the industry.
I'll tell you one valuation I'm looking at that's interesting, Bill, is you got so the PE for GAAP earnings trailing 12 months, so we're looking back, which doesn't include any of the future growth.
No.
Right? You know what the PE multiple is? 19.02. So right at 19, less than the market multiple if we're just looking back at, you know, back at normal, you know, trailing 12 month, and we're using true GAAP earnings too, right? And so that's if you take out, if you go non-GAAP, it's right at 7, even if you're looking back 12 months. So it's pretty compelling story, actually.
I think so. But, hey, the market right now disagrees, okay? So we'll see who's right a month from now or 2 months from now. Broadcom exec says Taiwan Semiconductor is reaching capacity limits. And, of course, that's another one. We've just named every one of the semiconductor companies that are worth looking at this point in time. The nucleus. I mean, you don't need to go out to some of these smaller ones. There is one other one that's pretty interesting. AXTI. They have a rare earth that's needed in semiconductors, and they're you know, they're one of the big suppliers of that. That's probably one of the hottest stocks in the market right now. AXTI. It's a little one. But it's because there's four different elements that end in UM, which means rare earth, that they provide to the semiconductor industry. Okay, let's totally switch subjects here, and let's go to the private credit. Barry, this thing is continuing to come unwound at the seams, and I was having a discussion with junior analyst number one this morning. I said, how does this compare to the mortgage market meltdown of 08-09? And here's what I found. This is bigger. There's more money in this private credit than there was in the mortgage market. But the difference I see is all this money is tied up in venture capital firms, private equity firms, and the banks are pretty much immune from it, other than a few. J.P. Morgan has the largest exposure. But the mortgage crisis was Lehman Brothers, it was Wachovia, it was Bank of America, it was Merrill Lynch, it was all the big financial institutions. Do you think that because of that, that this the news today is Apollo, which is up to their eyeballs in this crap, they're restricting investor withdrawals to 45% in their $15 billion credit fund, okay? Second, Ares Management is latest to restrict withdrawals. This is all today from their private credit fund. And there's a third one. No, it's those two today. Think about this during the break. Could this turn into another 2008-2009? We'll be right back. And welcome back here to the final segment of today's Best Stocks Now show. You know, I just want to go back to Micron once again. I'd looked at the app. I programmed the app to do five-year valuations. And I like what I have as a five-year valuation on Micron. It's got a 17% growth rate over the next 5 years, Barry, and it's currently trading. The forward PE, I use next year's earnings estimates for my forward PE. 4.36 is the forward PE versus a 17 growth rate. That means it's trading at a PEG ratio of 0.25. Can you believe this? And my target price is $795, which gives it 97% upside potential 5 years from now. I like that work. I like that equation.
Yeah, and I think it makes sense to, you know, for the audience as a reminder, because you're great at teaching folks out there too. Anything under a PEG ratio of one, which is just the, you know, the PE divided by the earnings growth rate, that if that figure is below, you know, below one, it's considered undervalued.
And
that,
yes,
and on that particular, you know, it's not, but it's not the only calculation to use, but it's pretty remarkable that they're. That their PEG ratio is so low.
Yes, but there is just a little bit of an asterisk there. It's this bulge, this peak.
Right, yeah.
It's not going to be a steady line of growth. It's like growth drinking out of a fire hose for the next two or three years. Yeah. How do you put a value? I think the app has done a good job putting a value on that. So anyways, that's where we're at with Micron. Okay, now. The private credit story, it's not going to be pretty. And here's the other thing. There's a big push to allow 401ks to invest in private equity and private credit. And there's also a big pushback on not allowing this. And I would say that with these issues in the private credit markets, that's going to put a big damper on allowing private investments. Trump was for it. I don't know if he still is when he sees this private credit thing blow up. But should they allow people to invest in private equity and private credit, which is very risky. It's very risky in your 401k. And I think the private credit markets were kind of counting on, because what they need is new money coming in, right? They need to keep raising money putting it like a Ponzi scheme would
well,
do.
And that what it does is gives them liquidity.
Exactly.
So then they could potentially provide liquidity right to their other investors. So
they can handle the redemptions.
Yeah, and it's one of these things where there's certain types of private credit that's backed by real assets and is not the riskiest part of that spectrum. But there's a lot of trying to find where as Jamie Dimon mentions, the cockroaches, right? It's hard to find. You know, you got to do your due diligence, and frankly, a lot of these things were done in a yield hungry environment. And now, when you're looking back, right, it's like, oh, maybe this wasn't the best idea. Right?
And the other thing here, they have not started to mark down their portfolio. That's when the private real estate really started to unwind, is when they were forced
to mark your book. Right, exactly.
And they're not doing that yet with the private credit, maybe just like 1% or 2%. But, like those mortgage loans were written down to like 20 cents on the dollar, 10 cents on the dollar. And that could happen in these private credit markets. Now, I want to talk about another issue here. I see that Bank of America is upgrading the stock of Oracle to a buy. We would disagree with that. But we did make an investment in Oracle recently. Tell the folks about that.
Yeah, on the bond side, we saw a spike in rates, as we've mentioned, with the war in Iran last week. And
I told you the bond market's on sale.
On sale. Let's go pick through. And, we came across an Oracle bond. It's going to, matures in just a little under 5 years. I think the yield to worst on it was around 5.22%. And we prefer somewhere in that 6% range, but that just hasn't existed in the last year and a half, right? So it's finally found a decent bond. I think the bond we bought before that was probably AppLovin, which is probably over 8 months ago, maybe. So,
yeah,
it's been a while, and we're still searching through because there's. As you see these rates tick up, might provide some opportunity there. So.
And that's our alternative investment for people that say, you know what, I'd be happy with 5% a year and, with a pretty high degree of a favorable outcome. I don't think the Oracle's going out of business over that.
And if you need to sell the bond, the other thing, too, is liquidity.
Liquidity.
If you need to sell the bond, you sell it into the market. You can, you'd be good funds tomorrow. So it's not, it's got marketability.
But God bless most our listeners, Barry. They're sitting there going, I don't want 5%.
Right.
I want ultra growth. I want 40% a year. That seems to be.
The bond's not the most exciting thing to talk about on this show. It's not
there
the best
are people
now,
that are
Jeff.
Risk adverse that get sucked into an annuity or whatever, no liquidity, and a lot of these annuities, they're 4 or 5%, right? You're tying up your money. You're losing a lot to the fees. You don't have a real guaranteed, not a guaranteed, but the outcome could be a lot of variables in that outcome. And someone's making a big 10% or 8% commission off of you. And at the end of the day, you could buy a individual bond or 10 of them or so, pay no commissions whatsoever, and have a 5% outcome down the road. I just think that is by far the better alternative. That's just me. Okay, last but not least, Bank of America does agree with us on a couple of stocks we own. They're upgrading Nebius today to a buy, and CoreWeave, which we like those stocks, but we don't like the Oracle, the stock. Okay, we're getting real close to our Sarasota trip in about 3 weeks from now. April 7th, 8th, and 9th, those spots are going very quickly at the Even Hotel in Lakewood Ranch, a one-hour meeting, private consultation with Gunderson and Kite and team coming to your town, and a workshop on that Tuesday night, April the 7th. Call 855-611-BEST to reserve a spot, either the workshop, a one-hour meeting, or both. And, of course, get the 4-week trial to the newsletter or make an appointment with us over the phone from wherever you are at 855-611-BEST or GundersonCapital.com. Have a great day, everybody.
This show is not a solicitation to buy or sell any securities. Bill Gunderson or clients of Gunderson Capital Management may have long or short positions in stocks mentioned during the show. Past performance is not indicative of future performance. Gunderson Capital Management is a fee-based registered investment advisory firm. All accounts are held at Charles Schwab. Schwab is a member of SIPC and FINRA.